Welcome to Word Warren. With me today, Justin.
Hello.
Hannah on the controls.
Hello.
And Aaron, our special guest.
Hello.
Yay. And we're going to talk about poetry.
Poetry.
This is chapter 11. Sometimes the curtains are just blue.
How dare you, Sarah?
Let's see.
All of my creative writing teachers from all of my college courses would like to have a word with you about that.
I feel like I'm missing something. Am I missing something already?
Oh my gosh. So there's this big... Okay. A lot of people that teach creative writing, specifically poetry, like to read into things a lot. Mm. So the curtains aren't blue because they're blue. The curtains are blue to reflect the melancholy of the writer and to bring a sense of sadness into the room. Or maybe because the poem's about the writer's young son, and so they're referencing the fact that it's a book. They always have to have a reason for every single tiny little insignificant detail in anything.
Have we talked about this before? Like, my feelings about this piece of art? I think I know people pretty well. I ask a lot of questions. I dig really deep, you know, in everything. I read a lot about people. I don't think people are capable of that intentionally all the time.
Not all the time. I think people are capable of it, but yes. It takes a lot of purposeful planning to get to that point. Like, yeah.
In the amount that people say they put into, like, a TV show, they're like, they did this for this, and this for this, and this for this, and this for... I don't think so. I think they were busy. I think that's a lot of work.
I think sometimes they look at the things that tie together, and they go, oh, those tie together really well. You know what we should do next season is just pretend like we meant to do that all along.
I feel like that's exactly it. Like, and then they get stuck in this loop where maybe like 5% of them are able to do it at a high level.
I do think that there is something to be said for poetry having those kinds of symbolism in it. Mm-hmm. Because poem is usually something that you write, you rewrite, you rewrite, you rewrite, you rework, and then you publish.
Really?
A lot of times.
Well, I've just destroyed the magic of it
for me. I know. I'm sorry.
I just imagine some sad guy on like a hill next to a river, you know, it's raining and he can't get the girl he wants and he's just like writing his feelings and then it's a book. That's not how it works.
There's definitely probably some of that. Yeah. Probably. But like overall, poetry is something that's like, this is the feeling I want to convey. How can I do this in a lyrical fashion, more or less?
Now, wanting to convey a feeling, I think you can make a color mean something without intentionally making it mean something.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
Like, I'm just describing this room and I want it to feel dark or sad or whatever. I don't know what colors tie to feelings. Yeah. That's not my... I don't know. I just don't know that. And so you're like, okay, I'm going to make the room blue because, you know, that's what I'm imagining when I'm feeling this feeling.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they're like, I'm going to do it blue because it'll make everybody else think that way. But maybe I... feel when I'm looking for that feeling, that's the color I see, so I'm just going to use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is definitely
less intentional.
And there is precedent for it in writers that have been interviewed for things being like, why did you pick this kind of stuff? And they'll be like, oh, well, I thought that this color really brought out a sense of this kind of feeling and I wanted to instill this in my readers and, you know, blah, 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 blah. I don't think it's always intentional.
I don't think so. That's exactly it. Like, yeah. I was saying, there's might be like 5% of people who do it intentionally. And then the other 95% of people have to answer like, no, I did it intentionally too, because you kind of set that expectation that exists.
There's also something to be said for especially versed poetry, free form poetry, like just kind of writing your feelings in a slightly lyrical way is completely different. But like versed poetry where you have beats and syllables and a specific form that you have to follow, you have to choose your words very, very carefully to fit the mold of that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is much more intentional in that kind of poetry because you have 5 words to convey this feeling. You have to make sure you pick each of those words very carefully to do it.
Which I think is still a limit to the intention of it, right? Like I have to, I'm using this rhyme, this syllable, this whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I have these 5 things to choose. But what if the thing you really want to choose is orange, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, you're still stuck, you're still limiting yourself. And you're like, okay, I picked this 1 out of 5 words because this is the one that makes me feel the moodiest, which is still a lot less intentional, I feel. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you're sort of pigeonholed and then you made the decision. You're like, no, I wanted to do that the whole time.
I meant to do it the whole time.
That's why I use that first word. I don't know. I don't know anything about poetry. This is going to be
fun. Hi, Sarah. Sorry, yeah. we just went off immediately. Yeah.
I missed the last episode.
Welcome back, Justin. We missed you on the last episode.
I'm here to derail us constantly.
Okay, so I used a couple of sources. This is Wikipedia, poetry.org, and then thoughtco.com.
Thoughtco.org.com?
No, sorry, thoughtco.com.
.org.com.net?
.net, yeah. Yeah.
.edu. Yeah. .edu.
So, I don't know. The more, like, I tried to find definitions for it, most of the articles just were just, like, lists of different types of poems. Like, this is a poem, and then explaining the form of it, or whatever. And then this is a poem, and explaining the form of it, because there's, like, not really a definition of what poetry is.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I like that the most out of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was always explained to it by my creative writing professors. Mm-hmm. I say that because they're all just like that. As a purposeful and lyrical way of telling a story in fewer words. So it's like short story, but very selective.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of it's like, okay. Well, my first quote I got was from, it says, some modernists challenge the very attempt to define poetry as misguided. So we're done. Okay. Bye.
Bye. That's it. That's the episode. Poetry doesn't exist. You've been lied to your whole life. Go home.
But that sounds real. That sounds, first of all, like, I don't understand any of this. Why can't you have to define a word, or it shouldn't exist, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what are you using it for other than to as a definition of? I don't
know. No, I think actually the definition that Hannah just said was like, okay, so I did find that poetry comes from the Greek word poau. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. I listened to a YouTube video like 7 times this morning. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Just over and over. Powwow. Powwow. Powwow.
And so powwow means to create or to make. And that's what poetry is.
The Oxford English Dictionary defines poetry as a literary work in which special intensity is given to the expression of feelings and ideas by use of distinctive style and rhythm.
Yeah. So yeah, that's like, yeah. It's like usually a form of literature that's like more aesthetic, like in its, like, because oftentimes the words that they use, the shape of the word on the page is important sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, especially I learned about like in Arabic, like poetry, especially with their calligraphy, like the shape of the word is really important when they're writing it out on paper. And then it also changes via culture and language, because different words have different meanings to different people. And that's why a lot of translated poetry it's difficult to translate, because it has like the word has like weight or baggage to it, depending on where it's like coming from. So yeah,
cultural connections,
right?
Context.
Yeah. So
That's also a big problem in rhymed poetry when you translate it from one language to another, because a lot of times the words no longer rhyme, and so the poem itself, the rhythm behind it, no longer makes sense because the words don't rhyme.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff also was like, it's about like an economy of words too, like trying to get your point across in as few of like words as you can, like to convey the message. Or
so like, what is the haiku? Isn't that an economy of words exercise?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's very like,
also sonnets from Shakespeare have a very specific word syllable limit. Mm-hmm. In each line that is in a sonnet.
Then you get some of like the ancient epics where it's just pages on pages and you feel like it's never gonna end.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Economy of space, who's she?
Yeah, it's often like they rely on like the imagery of the word and word association to like get across whatever the poet is trying to get across, whether it's like an emotion or a story, because there are narrative poetry or and stuff like that. So
I have a question, one that I'm sure you'll be able to answer. So I have a belief in already, just from watching people talk to each other, that most of us don't understand what anybody is saying, right? Like really, truly, right? Like I know Aaron well, and I can watch Aaron probably, if I was watching, this is all fake. This didn't happen. I'm not.
He leans around the corner. Yeah.
Yes, hypothetically. Okay. I know Aaron, and when I could watch Aaron talk to someone and know the meaning she puts behind words and what she means. But I can usually watch the person that someone like Aaron, someone I know well, talk to, not understand the meaning of what they're saying. And so it's hard for me to believe that people even understand the basic communication we use, that is uncolorful. Mm-hmm. What do you think the percentage, all of you, like, what do you think the percentage of correctly understanding the meaning that a poet is trying to convey would be?
I used to get into fights a lot with my creative writing teacher in high school because unless the author is alive to confirm what they're trying to say mm-hmm. through their poetry, then we don't know exactly what they were trying mm-hmm. to say. Mm-hmm. And to try and set like a definite line of this is what they were saying would always really tick me off. Because you mm-hmm. could look at it this way and it means a whole other mm-hmm. thing, but they never wanted to go into that because there was like this accepted mm-hmm. idea of what they were saying.
I used to get into it with my creative writing professors too, because I've always felt that poetry is, when you write poetry, you have a very distinctive thing in mind that you're mm-hmm. trying to mm-hmm. convey. And I think poetry is a form of writing where you are attempting to convey something very personal, or not necessarily personal, but something strong to the people reading it. However, you have to accept that as humans, people are going to interpret different things mm-hmm. different ways.
It's sort of like a painting.
And so I think all poetry is subjective at, mm-hmm. at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Like you said, unless the author is there to be like, no. This is yeah. what I meant by mm-hmm. this. But like, two people may have a completely different association to the word dog. Mm-hmm. Like, I think of a dog and I think of a fluffy, stupid, tongue hanging out of its mouth, tail wagging, adorable little puppy.
Mm-hmm. I think about getting attacked when I'm riding my bike.
Somebody like Justin.
Comforting.
So if I wrote a poem where I didn't describe the dog I was talking about, where I just mentioned, like if I likened a feeling to seeing a dog, like it made me feel like seeing my dog or seeing a dog. Mm. That's a very different feeling that I have mm-hmm. than Justin would have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the whole tone of that poem then for you would be tense, where for me it would be happy.
Dogs mm-hmm. love to be mm-hmm. chasing people.
My dog would absolutely not chase you on your bike because he is terrified of bikes.
Poor Buster.
Yeah. I wanted to teach him to run alongside my bike, and that did not happen.
He's a complicated dog.
He's a very complicated. He would yell at you on your bike.
Okay.
But he would not approach you on your bike.
I don't mind when they yell at me. I get it. I'm making a bunch of noise running through town.
But yeah. So I agree with you, Aaron. I think mm-hmm. it's subjective as heck.
There is that very huge much. Element of mm-hmm. what the reader brings to the table totally. When approaching yeah. something. Like, I mean, that's mm-hmm. like that with anything, but especially with poetry.
Yeah.
Is that the filter of the reader is a huge contributor to what is going to be taken away from it.
And when I was doing all my literary studies, because once upon a time I wanted to go into creative writing, I wanted to do that. I wanted to teach creative writing. I always just assumed that poetry was a subjective medium, mm-hmm. that you maybe write something with intention, but how poetry is interpreted is completely different from one person to another. And it always made me so mad in class when the teacher would be like, what do you think the author was trying to say? And somebody would go, oh, I think that they were talking about this. And they'd go, you're wrong.
Nope, that's definitely not it.
Excuse me, this person is dead.
Yeah.
We don't know what they were trying to say. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't it be that?
Yeah. And we don't even know what that would translate into now. Even if what you're saying might be right, what does that mean in times like now? How can we compare those things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because language continues to evolve all the time. So
language and our culture, mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
that's a reason I haven't read a lot of poetry mm-hmm. is because I don't want to go into something that I feel is subjective and to feel like I'm expected to get a meaning from a bunch of color, right? Like a specific meaning. I want to be able to get my own meaning, but I know that because I went to those classes. English was like what I was best at in high school. I was in all the higher classes. I don't know what they call them. They weren't AP in my school. They were honors, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't like being put in a position where I was supposed to take in this art. Okay, now tell me exactly what it means. There's one right answer. Like, I can't do that. Right. That's not how I feel. No, I feel differently. I especially when I was young, I was.
Well, I think all art is subjective. And I think even novels, even books mm-hmm. are subjective because you can look at it and be like, okay, well, what's the underlying theme here that the author was trying to convey?
Mm-hmm.
And three different people reading the same book might come up with different underlying themes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think
Lord of the Flies, that happens with me a lot.
Yeah, Lord of the Flies. Yep.
Everybody sees something way different in it.
But I think that as humans, our instinct is to tell stories. And I think song and music is a big part of just humanity. Like, all cultures have songs and music. And I feel like poetry is the step between songs and music and literature. Because it's taking that form and lyrical type of storytelling and turning it into a written form. And so I think that poetry is a really important part of humanity, but I think that people try to attribute too much to it.
Like most things in humanity.
Like most things in humanity. Because poetry to me seems like one of, it feels like one of those genres that is very, very upper echelon of academia. They're like, oh, poetry.
Yeah.
Have you read Shakespeare? Like, have you really read Shakespeare? Because all it is a bunch of dick jokes. It's not hot. It is not fancy literature. Yeah, like,
because, yeah. I think that's the one of the reasons I would agree with Justin, like, when he was saying, like, that's why I haven't read a ton of poetry, because you feel, it feels like people, I mean, you know, quote unquote, people that read or write poetry are kind of elitist, and like, if I don't understand it, then I'm not reading it right or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I avoid it most of the time.
That's fair.
Like, but like, I think when I was doing my research, there is a movement. I know, I wish I wasn't thinking we'd go here, so I didn't write it down. But
there was
a movement in poetry where the emphasis is more on how the audience, like, receives the poetry that were versus what the author intended by the poet or the poem. That's cool.
which I think is the way that poetry should be. Like, it's fine to write something and be like, this is how I'm feeling right now. I just want to share these feelings. But I think it's amazing when you write something, someone else reads it, and they take something completely different away from it. And you get to see a reaction that's wholly different than how you were feeling.
Right.
You get to see somebody experience something that is unique to them. And I think that's, to me, the best part of poetry is how many different ways it can be interpreted. The same five words can be interpreted by five different people.
Yeah.
Right. Uniquely.
There's even the same person at different places in their life can walk away with completely different things from the same poem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was, for sure. Like, if someone wrote a poem about, like, if the imagery is just so personal, right? Like, I feel, when I don't really feel loneliness much at all. But when I feel the most alone is when I'm around a lot of people. I don't know what it is about being around, it's like more than 20 people. I feel it. I don't know what it is. I just feel alone. I feel like I'm lost in whatever it is. I like being around small groups, anything bigger than 20, and I'm just washed away. And someone could write a poem about how they feel, like, in a crowd, right? And for me, that is the, if you say, you know, like, in a crowd, I think, you know, I don't know, the typical, like, single walker in the Japanese crosswalk where there's thousands of people, you know?
And I immediately go to, like, a concert venue hall, like, standing in the crowd of people, like, that kind of stuff. Like, that's my crowd.
And how do you feel in those moments, right? So someone could talk about, it's so hyper, hyper subjective. You could talk about how you feel in this group of people, and it's different for every single one of us in this room. And it's a different kind of good or bad.
I start thinking about standing in a crowd and my heart starts beating and I'm starting to feel anxious. And I'm like, I need to get out.
It's okay, Aaron. There's only
four people.
There's only four people.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's technically five because Hal's over there. But, you know, it's okay.
There's a wall.
Hal counts.
Hal counts.
I don't want to be told that I have to feel a certain way about a certain thing. I don't want to. I'm not going to feel that way. And it feels like some elitist test that I'm not going to pass because I'm not that.
I have held on to a line from Walt Whitman's Song of Myself. It's a very long poem, and I don't usually recommend anyone read it because it is just rambling. Four pages. Walt Whitman was a very long-winded dude.
Yeah.
But there is a line in Song of Myself that says, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes."
I love that.
And that has always stuck with me. And I think it applies really, really well to poetry because humans are so complex. And like you said, with people carrying, like, their life experiences changing how somebody reacts to a poem. And I don't know, that line from that poem has always stuck with me so hard. And I think that's the kind of stuff that I like from poetry, is stuff that just sticks with you.
Yeah.
Follows you around.
I love that too, because I contradict myself. Yeah. Because every moment is different, right? And every piece of information makes me a different person.
Humans are contradictory beings. We really are.
But people want you to be this solid, never changing, never evolving thing. And there's this like in the basis, not the basis, a part of social psychology, right? Is or one of the anchors for social psychology is people do not want to feel ostracized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the ways that you can feel ostracized is if people deem you as unreliable. Mm-hmm. And that's what people do anytime you try to change your mind or views.
Humans are hilarious because we're so afraid of change. Mm-hmm. And yet we absolutely are reliant on change as a species to progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so weird to me.
It's not good. It's
but poetry.
But poetry. All right. So
that's
then
what you did, Sarah.
It happens every time.
Justin, we missed having you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So the history, there's like some people, there's like a little bit of like controversy, I guess. I don't know. Where people think that poetry was like first before literature, but some others are like, no, literature was first before poetry or whatever. But it's like they probably happened at the same time.
I mean, most far likely. Back, and they're kind of one in the same.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think in the nonfiction episode, mm-hmm. we were like, nonfiction stuff probably was like one of the first things that we wrote down because that was what right? was needed.
It was just like, here's like, the herd or whatever, you know, but you need to follow it.
It probably all did kind of happen together.
Right.
Poetry yeah. could be attributed to the writing down of songs and legends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely is. Yeah.
When you guys imagine that moment, like the moment where poetry and literature are happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. Are you imagining like three cavemen just standing by a cave? Or are you imagining like...
I go to monks.
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 You know what's weird?
I always think of Beowulf, and that was originally transcribed.
I have such a nebulous idea of it. Like for me, it's multiple centuries of people bleeding together. And mm-hmm. so it's kind mm-hmm. of this weird collage of cavemen and like indigenous tribes and possibly some Benedictine monks, mm-hmm. but it's just kind of this like watercolor superimposed image of all of these people slowly starting to form language and write things down.
All right.
I don't have a solid like, oh, this is what I picture when that happens, mm-hmm. because I don't think that the evolution of writing happened in a moment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Does it have to be written? Poetry can be handed right. down.
That's fair. Yeah. yeah. Well, and then that's the thing. We had so many oral traditions.
Communicated. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. So, I get stuck. Like when I think about it, I think about like three cavemen. And then I realize that there were multiple types of people evolving and learning at multiple different levels at the same time. Right.
Yeah.
And so like if you even tried to pin down when it and where it happened, there's so much lost history. Just mm-hmm. such a weird thing mm-hmm. to argue about.
Right?
Yeah. Like, who knows what this one tribe right. did that was decimated thousands of years before we even really had written history right, and knew yeah. that they were around. Mm-hmm. Why?
Tangentially related. I'm going off on a weird history tangent here for a second. Yeah. There are these cave drawings, and I can't remember where they are because I wasn't thinking that we were going to talk about this, so I didn't pull it up. But the caveman thing made me think of it. There's these cave drawings that we found like 100 or so years ago, and they're these really weird, like they have lines in them, so it looks like they were scratched out, and we couldn't figure out what they were because they were the weirdest, like two-headed antelopes and like multi-headed elephants and stuff like that, and they were like, what were these people?
That was their rough draft. That was not for public consumption.
Well, so the thing is, recently a researcher realized that we've been viewing these cave drawings with like oil lamps and flashlights and luminescent stuff for this whole time to mm-hmm. study them. And he actually brought in a torch to look at it. Completely and the way the torch plays on the walls, the striations in there actually animate the cave drawings.
Wow. Oh my
gosh. So when the torches flicker, the gazelle lifts its head up and looks around, or the elephant like throws its trunk up in the air and stuff like that. So like cavemen had movies. So why wouldn't they have poetry is right? what I'm saying. Sorry, I thought that was so cool when I read that mm-hmm. article. Mm-hmm. I like got up and I was like, how?
That's amazing.
Look!
The first half, I thought that it was a kid who had done them, and then their parents were like, "You idiot! They only have one head." They were scratching it out. So.
No, it's like
this. Told you not to draw on the walls. Yeah.
if you've ever seen those Victorian poll books that they have, mm-hmm. where it's the striated lines, where it's got one picture in front and one picture in back, and yeah. you pull it, and it makes it look like the lady's riding a bicycle or something mm-hmm. like that. It's a very rudimentary form of that. So basically. Okay. One set of striated marks will have one form and the upper ones will have another. So when the fire goes into the marks, it makes it move.
I think
it's
I learned
like
a word.
Just like the dynamic images where they print it onto like triangular.
Yeah, exactly.
So you
like
look at
those.
It from one angle and you see one picture, and as you mm-hmm. shift, it transitions into another mm-hmm. picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know those double-sided pictures with the like the rays, the stickers that are
the lenticular.
Lenticular. Yeah. I just learned that word. I wanted to. Thanks for stealing my word.
You're welcome. I love all that right. word.
Yeah. Linda, I just learned it like 2 weeks ago.
What was it? That book?
No, it was
Everlasting.
It was not. It was Denise. She just was excited. She knew a word I didn't, so that lasted a while. So, thank you, Denise.
That is a fantastic word.
Also. Yeah. Such a great word.
It is. Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with poetry. Sorry, again, Sarah.
I mean, it's a very
does now.
It's a very poetic word.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the earliest poetries are like the Epic of Gilgamesh, which we talked about in our fantasy episode, that was written in Sumerian during the 3rd millennium BCE. And I tried to figure out what that meant. I don't know. It's like 2000 before. I don't, cause there's like the divide before the current era and after the current era or something like that.
So like BC counts down to zero and then AD counts up from zero. Right,
what about BCE?
Using the current instead of, because AD and we used to be before Christ and after Christ. And so now they're using CE, which means current era. So it's before current era.
It's a little bit more secular.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so okay. It's the same thing. It's just a different way of saying it.
So that's weird to me. Like, I don't know. That's weird to me.
Before the current era.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's still using the Christ dates, right?
Yeah.
We're just fooling ourselves, right? Like, we can just keep using it, like, before. I mean, I feel like we're trying too hard on that one.
Yeah.
Sorry, scientists. Good try. But.
And then they also found some texts in, they're just calling it the pyramid texts. It was during the 25th century BCE that was found in Africa, and they're like hunting poetry and stuff. So
hunting poetry, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that they're called the pyramid texts.
Yeah.
Because we were just discussing before the mics were on, maybe when the mics were on, like the Sonic the Hedgehog gene.
Right.
Like back then, they knew how to name stuff.
Yeah.
These are the pyramid texts next to the sand road. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the sand town with the pointy buildings.
Other than that, it's like, I mean, poetry sort of has like some basic elements to it as well. Like the form of poetry, which is like, the poetry is divided into lines on a page, and then those lines are usually organized into stanzas. But they also have stuff like a couplet, which is only two lines of poetry, and stuff like that. So, and they use they had this thing where it's like they use rhythm, metric, and rhyme. I read about rhythm and metric like for so long that they actually they sound the same. I don't know the difference between the two. Like, because rhythm is like kind of how it sounds when you read the poem, whereas
metric is the tempo in which you read the poem.
Right.
So rhythm is the actual like,
oh, it's like the number of syllables like on the page or in the line, but then metric is like how it's read aloud.
Yeah. So it's like when you listen to a song, if you listen to a song sped up versus slowed down, it still has the same rhythm, but the tempo and the metric is different in each version.
Okay.
So is a poem meant to be read slow or is it meant to be read fast? Which, again, subjective. Who knows?
this is the problem with poetry, for me, is you're talking about things that exist in songs that I've never had to discuss when discussing music, right? But when we get into poetry, everybody wants to talk about the
But
stuff. There are actually musical artists that have won awards for poetry for their lyrics.
Yeah. Well, and also, see,
but we don't have to talk about it to love it and be to like, I can say I love rap and people aren't like quizzing me. Oh, well, do you know the meaning of Kendrick Lamar's blah, blah, no, that's blah? Fair. You know, like, do you know what tempo and metric he was using?
There are platforms where they debate that.
I was going to say, if you were into the music genre, like if you took music courses and did any of that, if you studied music.
Yeah.
You would talk about rhythm and
but most people don't, and most people enjoy music, and poetry doesn't get enjoyed by many people, or as many people. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, because I know a lot of people who read, and nobody talks about poetry to me. And so, like, music is much more accessible because there aren't these tests, and there aren't this implied need of knowledge to be able to discuss it.
Yeah.
I can just say, I love this song, and that's it. Nobody even asked me why I love it. When's the last time somebody asked you why you loved a song you love? They don't. But if you said, I love this poet or poem, right? They'd be like, well, why? What does it do? Like, and you'd get quizzed and grilled. And I don't want to do that. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. That's I like fair. This poetry. Yeah. If you should read it, if you like it, don't talk to me about it.
Hey, Justin.
Yes.
I like Poe.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I like Poe Kadats.
Okay. Yeah. That's also fair.
That's as far as I'm going to get with that.
We're going to get.
I almost brought him up earlier when we were talking about how language changes. Because nobody knows what freaking Poe's talking about. And if you translated Poe, what a train wreck that would be. Oh my God, I feel so bad. I never thought about translated Poe.
Oh man.
What a nightmare. Welcome back, Sarah.
Yeah. Okay. okay. So then we kind of discussed different forms of poetry, because like a lot of classical poetry has more strict rules about the structure of it. Like you mentioned sonnets before, which are like a standardized 14-line poem that follow a specific rhythm. Mm-hmm. There's like the limerick, which is they considered it also be a poem.
Good.
Which
as it should be.
As it should be, yes.
It's a little more loose in its like definition, because the lines in a limerick should consist of between, you know, 7 and 10 syllables or whatever. And so it's like.
And then there's different versions of poems, which I'm sure they have actual names, but it's like the AAB. ABCs, like mm-hmm. how they work so out.
Like, yeah, because like I wrote down the rhyme scheme for like a traditional Italian sonnet does ABBA, ABBA, and then CDE, CDE.
Yep.
Like,
you know, like I never thought about the format of a limerick, but mm-hmm. Thinking about it, I've never heard a limerick that didn't work. So that's a brilliant format.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like it's just such an effective. Have you ever heard a bad limerick?
Is actually really difficult to write limericks, though.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the form that a limerick has to take, you have to have the rhyming words correctly.
And it's hard to rhyme with Nantucket.
And it's hard to rhyme with Nantucket.
It's not that hard. Without cursing, it's hard.
Okay. There we go.
There we go.
There we go. I actually did use the F word in a sonnet for one of my creative writing teachers at one point.
How did that land? Did that land well?
I got an A on it, all right. But I'm pretty sure it was his teacher's assistant that graded my work. Yeah. I went into that quarter. It was a college course, and this professor thought that rhymed poetry that rhymed, was the lowest form of poetry that existed. He thought that it was cheap and that it couldn't be done well. And so I made it my personal mission that entire quarter to only write rhyming verse for everything. But I did really complicated, most of the time, rhymes, like this, I don't know, just long ass words that.
Yeah. What the confidence someone must have to say that they can define what bad poetry is.
He was also the kind of person that like had a book of published poetry, and so he thought that he was just so cool. Like
published by CreateSpace.
Probably. All of his poems were about basketball.
What?
Right? Like, I was just like, you don't know what you're talking about. Why are you teaching a course in creative writing? What are you doing? You're terrible. Stop it.
5 laps. Get out of here. Wow. That's what a, I mean, what an isolated world that guy must live in.
Right.
Right? Like, I am a poet genius who writes about basketball.
I got
to define what poetry is good or not. Poetry.
I got a 4.0 in that class. I rhymed everything I possibly could that entire time. Good. Like, even my Shakespearean sonnets rhymed. Nice. Like, I was like, I guess sonnets usually rhyme, but they were complicated rhymes.
Right.
Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. I spent hours.
Yeah, because because the English sonnet or Shakespearean sonnet follows the rhyme scheme A B A B C D C D E F E F G G.
Yep. There we go.
Okay.
I wrote it down on this piece of paper just so.
I don't want to think about that stuff while I'm drawing art.
Is that the iambic pentameter?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just...
The thing is, you don't have to necessarily think about that while enjoying poetry. Mm-hmm. You have to think about it while you're writing poetry.
Yeah. Or discussing it, which is
depending on who you're depending on who you're discussing it with. Just don't discuss it with jerks, and you'll be fine.
That's a big part of our population. It's really hard to avoid
that. Okay. Different kinds of genre.
Thank you for keeping us on track, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
There are a couple of different genres of poems also. So narrative poetry, which is like specifically to tell a story, which includes like dramatic poetry and English and Scottish ballads and Baltic and Slavic heroics is what they call them.
You're whispering about Edgar Allan Poe.
Poe comes later. Hang on just a second.
We will be talking about Poe.
Fantastic.
There's the lyric poetry, which is, it's not really trying to tell a story. It's just more of like, they're more contemplative, I guess. It's like more personal thoughts and feelings type
That's
of thing.
The lyrical?
The lyrical one, yeah. Okay. And then there's even speculative poetry, which is like poet that deals with
Don't cut that.
Y'all right?
Yeah. Y'all right.
We do words for a living. We're good with the words.
Deals thematically with subjects which are beyond reality and includes horror fiction, which is what Poe's known for.
I don't know what he's going for because I don't understand what he writes because he uses weird words. And that's that.
Gothic poetry.
Gothic poetry. Yep.
So I don't like gothic poetry. there's sci-fi poetry, though?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we know any sci-fi poets?
No. I don't. No.
Aaron, this is all in your wheelhouse. Come on.
Everybody, all the other three of us think you're the expert.
I talk to her about books every day. I know she's the expert.
We were like,
not in this category. I'm sorry.
I think you still are.
Compared to the rest of us.
Yes, at State of Affairs.
We literally were like, we're going to talk about poetry, but none of us really know much about poetry. I know, let's bring Erin. Yeah.
She's the weird kid who, instead of eating whatever, right, will read whatever. That's you.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
I can't think of any sci-fi poetry that I've read.
I feel like we should know that in the story.
I know, right? I should.
There are definitely sci-fi authors out there who also released poetry. Mm. I just can't think of any of the names. Yeah.
I know. Because, until I did this research, I actually didn't realize that sci-fi poetry would be...
Huh?
The Spock, what's his name? Leonard Nimoy has a poetry book.
Oh, yes, he does.
I processed it.
I don't remember... I think it's more like contemporary real world stuff.
I mean, probably.
Though,
it's as close as I can.
I'm entirely certain about that.
Tangentially, it's sci-fi. He was on a sci-fi show and then he wrote poetry. So sci-fi poetry.
Mm-hmm. Sci-fi poetry.
I'm sure that some professor out there would tell me how sci-fi is.
There has to be poems about space exploration.
I'm certain at the very least, William Shatner has written several poems.
I'm sure
about his experiences.
I would read a Starfleet poetry book. I would 100% read that if somebody was like, "This is a book of poems written from the perspective of Starfleet." I would be like,
"Red shirts only."
Yep.
Contemplating their missions.
Oh my god! I would pay even more money to read that one.
Oh yeah.
I play in a campaign with Sam for Star Trek Adventures, and I made my character. I based her on Janeway, of course. So, but I specifically put one of my skills as 19th century Russian poetry, just to see if it would come up in the campaign. And so far it hasn't.
Sarah, can you become an expert on 19th century Russian poetry and write us some Starfleet poetry? Can you do that, please?
I should.
From the perspective.
Like, tomorrow.
I'll write it as my character.
It is... We are recording this in November. I don't know if it'll come out in November, but it is National Novel Writing Month.
It is.
So you should do that.
Maybe I should try that
thing.
Okay. I can only think of two books that I've read that have poems in it.
Okay.
So those are my recommendations.
There's also novels that are written in the poem format.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Something like a Ellen Hopkins in YA Crank.
Ah, mm-hmm. Yes.
Those ones, they're all poetry.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
One of the books I read was when I was a kid. I got it like a Scholastic book fair or whatever. It's called Piping Down the Valleys Wild. And it was just a bunch of different poems, all for like all ages. I don't really remember any specifics from that one. That's fair. Just remember having it. I think it's still on my bookshelf too. Just kind of floats around. I did read in a, so there was an anthology series edited by Stephen King called Flight or Fright.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And the last story in the thing was actually a poem called Falling by James Dickey. And it was like 5 or 6 pages long, but it was a poem about a stewardess who got sucked out of an airplane and fell to her death.
Oh, nice.
No, thank you.
I like it.
Nice. That, I'm definitely going to read that on the next flight I take.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I will hate myself, but it will be great.
Hard mode. Yep.
Yes.
Oh, what are you reading? Looking at my seatmate, just like, it's a poem about dying mid-flight.
Yeah. Make sure to take an edible right before that flight, too.
Oh, no.
Really immerse yourself in the terror.
I will not do that. That sounds terrible.
Hard mode.
I actually do have a recommendation. Just one. It's one of my favorite poetry books that I've owned. It's Japanese Death Poems. Mm. Excuse me as I throw my pen. It's a collection of poems put together by Joel Hoffman. And it's this tradition in Japan of... Death isn't quite as weird in Japan as it is here. Like, it's not such a taboo subject. And so it's been a tradition for a very, very long time of people writing down a poem in their final moments of life.
Oh.
And so it's these people who know they're about to die writing these poems, and they span the gambit from hilarious, just funny stuff to really deep, moving things like reflecting on their life and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's super good. I highly recommend it to a lot of people. It's nice to read. And it's originally Japanese, the form is different than a lot of American poetry. So I like it.
Cool. Interesting. I mean,
other than that, almost all the poetry books I own, I realize, were like the little poetry journals that were published by my college back in the day, because I always submitted stuff to get published in those, and like then I would just buy them because I'd be like, look, I got my poem published in a little line. It's great.
Nice, yeah.
So
you're a published poet.
I actually got 3 of my poems published in an anthology called Poems by Young Americans when I was in 10th grade.
Wow. I didn't know that. So you're the expert. Get out of here, Aaron.
You need to track that book down now.
Yep. What was it called again?
Nope.
It's recorded. Hopefully she doesn't edit it out.
She'll just edit
Poems by Young Americans?
Something like that. I still have a copy somewhere. I'll find it. It's not like, oh my God, it's such a big honor, because they literally would take submissions from thousands of kids and publish most of them as long as they were legible. So, like,
I'm still impressed. You can't take that from me.
Yeah.
Well, let's let Aaron go, because I'm going to say a lot of stuff.
Oh, okay. Oh, also, I would recommend Poe, but Justin's mad about that. So.
I'm not mad about it. I'm just disappointed about it.
So we're doing recommendations at this point. So a modern poet that I really enjoy is Amanda Lovelace. Mm-hmm. Her Women Are Magic books are just really wonderful. So it's The Princess Saves Herself in this one. The Witch Doesn't Burn in this one. They're a lot about like self-discovery, figuring out who you are, overcoming trauma. Mm-hmm. And it just like while I'm reading them, I'm constantly taking pictures of just different passages so that I can reread it again throughout the day. I also really love Adrienne Rich, who she was a poet mm-hmm. from, I want to say to the 50s to like 70s, but she went farther than that. But she had some just really thoughtful stuff. Like, if my brain is feeling sluggish, I like to read her because it just gets me stimulated and thinking about the world around me and what it means to be a person. I don't know if I would necessarily consider him a poet, but Hugh Prather, he's more like philosopher kind of thing. But his collection, I Touch the Earth, the Earth Touches Me, is amazing. And there's definitely poetry in there. And I've got a copy that I think a third of the pages are dog-eared because I keep revisiting it. And nice. There's just so many passages where I read it and then I have to just stop everything I'm doing, everything I'm thinking to just sit in what he's saying. And I love the works. I would also agree. I love Poe. I love Poe.
It's fine. We're at different desks. So how did you find those authors?
Browsing used bookstores.
Yeah. So you just browse poetry and do you read pages?
So I will. Or? Yeah, I'll grab something and I'll flip to a random page and see if the tone of it connects with me, if the voice of it connects with me.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, then I'll put it down. And a lot of the time I just let my finger like trail along the spines and then something like snags my finger or something tells me to just stop. Then I'll grab it and check it out. And I don't know, I come across some really interesting stuff, especially in used bookstores. That way.
Interesting. Yeah. That's part of my plan. I plan to read poetry, and my plan is we have a bunch of zines and chat books here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just going to start buying a couple a paycheck because they're pretty cheap. They're, you know, $5 or $6. Mm-hmm. And then because I don't even know what I like or how to define what I want. And so I'm just going to chip away at those. I'll find something that calls to me in whatever way and just read them. And then if I find an author I like, find out. That's how I think I'm going to have to do it is find an author I like first and then look up what their style is or what they're known for and then try to follow that definition trail. I think that's what works for me a lot.
I think you may enjoy that Hugh Prather book, actually.
Hugh Prather?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good. I'll take whatever recommendations for sure. I used to write poetry when I was a kid and I didn't get published, but I like won a poetry contest in high school.
It was look at you. You're a poet.
It was a thing. I mean, I just wrote stuff and all of it was about smoking pot, but nobody knew.
That can be a beautiful thing worth writing.
You know, sitting in the back of a car in high school, like depressed, smoking pot while it's like raining outside and you're skipping class is a moment to capture. Right. Like there's a lot of thought that happens in those moments for all of us who were smoking pot in the back of cars when they were depressed in high school.
I like stopped writing poetry in high school because my mom found a bunch of my poetry and it was super dark and she threatened to send me to church camp.
Oh,
because she was worried about me.
Church camp's so fun, though.
So not therapy like I probably needed.
Yeah.
And so I was like, cool, I'm just never gonna write poetry again. Okay, bye.
Probably like 5 times somebody read my poetry and like, this is beautiful. You should talk to someone.
You should talk to someone. I am talking to somebody. I'm talking to a book.
Yeah, I'm working this out on the pages.
Listen, I'm working through my stuff.
I had the same thing, although my format was short stories. Yeah. And it was always like really, really dark. And people would be like, are you okay? It's like, I am now that I've gotten it out on the page.
It's not festering inside of me. It's now on a page. We're fine. Come on.
None of us are okay. You know what
I mean, is anyone really?
I don't think
like, so. Anyone really?
I've never met anybody. No.
What is okay?
What is that? I think okay is an expectation that we should not have. Really. I think if we just set our expectations differently, everything will be fine.
I think that it is okay to not be okay.
I think so, too. Think so. I'm sorry I cursed.
I think so. It's okay.
Terrible.
I can edit that.
Thank you. Don't edit that. Pearl clutching I did right afterwards. Oh no, my gosh.
I'll leave that in.
Yeah. I will absolutely leave that in.
You know what I'm surprised about? Is it
beep over the top. Yeah.
I need to go through. I have an external hard drive over there that has all of our sound effects on it, and I need to just download a bunch of them onto my laptop so that I can put those in. Perfect. I'll just put the bats like wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, I like it. That's perfect.
I'm gonna mention because I just thought of it there was a local author who just came in the other day and dropped off his new book of poetry, ooh, which as of the time of the recording of this is not entered into inventory yet, but he does have his first book of poetry, which is called Fuzzies, Warm and Evil by Brandon Sullivan.
I know Brandon. Okay. He's a cool cat. He used to be in the writing group that I was part of before. In the before times,
yeah,
you know,
in the before times, yeah,
before everything stopped being able to be meet in person. Mm-hmm. He writes a really great poetry. Actually, I would highly recommend his book.
There you go. Okay, I just thought of that because I spoke with him yesterday or the day before or something. So
nice and timely.
Yeah,
I'm surprised nobody's brought up Shel Silverstein.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
we didn't.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah, so that'd be my recommendation.
Nice. There you go, Shel Silverstein. Yeah,
and I read Stevie Smith's Me Again.
Okay.
And that was good, and I learned a word. I asked, because I got it from our boss, and I asked, I liked it, and I wanted to know why I liked it, because I didn't know why I liked it. I don't know any of the words for any of this. And she said it's accessible poetry.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's a word that we could look for. We're helping people look for poetry.
Is a book of poetry. For those of you who have listened to the podcast for a while, you would know that our friend Ian Martin passed away a couple years ago. He wrote a book of poetry called, I believe it's Apotheosis?
Yeah, Apotheosis. Yeah.
It is a little weird. It's definitely one of those ones where you got to be in the right headspace to read some of the stuff, because he was like one of those people that like mind worked like a maze. So a lot of his poetry is kind of bizarre sometimes, but it's really good poetry still. I like it.
Cool. I'll mention the book club book, even though I don't know when this is going out, or should I just not?
No, we can mention the book club book.
So our December book club read is actually an anthology called Writers of the Future, Volume 37. And so usually when I do an anthology, everybody just reads like two or three of the short stories, and then we get together and just generally discuss. So if you're interested in doing that, it'll be Writers of the Future. It's a really fun mix of sci-fi and fantasy, plus it's like a world writing competition, so they get like writers from all over the place that are writing book or short stories for
it. I really like all of the Writer of the Futures books, like they're really good anthologies.
Yeah, I think so. So how about currently reading? Anybody want to talk about what they're currently reading?
Currently
I just finished Dark Archive. It was fantastic. And yeah, I haven't really started anything. I've kind of like, I don't know. Everything I pick up, I'm just kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard after a book that big and deep. And
yeah, good. Yeah.
A man called Uwe did that to me. Uwe.
Uwe.
I just made it through. I just finished the fifth Dresden book.
Oh, okay.
I'm working my way through those pretty quick. Cool. I like them. He, in like the fourth book, he like takes a minute and sort of breaks the third wall and looks at the camera and says, I'm sorry, I talk about girls so much. So at least it's been acknowledged by the fourth book. It's pretty, just took a second, like, hey, I noticed these things. I'm so sorry. Right.
Great.
And that's,
great.
Oops. Yeah, I'm reading through that because I read a lot of deep books and I wanted to read something pulpy, and that is brilliantly pulpy.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. I like it.
What about you, Aaron?
I am currently reading, so I'm working through the last book in the Kane Chronicles by Rick Riordan. So that's the Egyptian themed ones.
How many Rick Riordan books have you read?
I think this is number 19 for the year. I'm not certain on that, though.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I went deep. I am also reading Portuguese Irregular Verbs by Alexander McCall Smith, which is pretty delightful. Yeah. It's the first in the Professor Dr. von Engelfeld entertainment series, which it's ridiculous. And it's about like an academic who's certain, because he is such an academic, that he can handle anything. And then he promptly learns that that's not true. He's not that great at everything.
That one's actually on my to-be read shelf.
I bet it'd be fun to talk about poetry with.
Absolutely. And then I just started the audiobook for The Liar's Dictionary by Ely Williams. Ooh. And that one's been really fun. It's so it follows multiple timelines about a dictionary where this guy, he just started making up words, and there's a term for it. It's like fox weasel or something like that, where a dictionary will include a fake word to prevent copyright infringement. And this woman, basically, she gets tasked with tracking down all of the fake words in the dictionary that she works for. And there's so many of them. So you're following the timeline of the guy creating these words. words and then her trying to track them all down and figure out what the heck is going on here. And it's been really, really fun. It is very verbally dense because they go into like the definitions of every word that comes up almost and everything. But it's really entertaining. Nice. And if you're a lover of words, cool, then it's great. It's very fun.
That's on my reading list.
There was wrestling with a pelican that just happened.
Wrestling with a pelican?
Yeah, someone just wrestled a pelican. It was pretty intense.
Okay. I would not want to wrestle a pelican.
It was not working out very well for her.
They are terrifying.
They are, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Horrifying birds. If they were just a little larger, they would absolutely try and eat people.
Yes.
Go, so. Real close at least to try dinosaurs.
And scoop up small children and fly away with them.
They eat whole seagulls.
Have you seen one of those videos of like a pelican eating a seagull?
Yes, that's terrifying.
It's awful.
Yeah. Overheated pelicans are just the most disturbing thing.
Oh my gosh.
Their spine is literally pushing out of their mouth.
They'll open their mouth all the way and lean their head back, and their spine is just coated with like a little layer of like membrane because that's so how weird. They cool themselves
terrifying.
Down.
I don't even like having that mental image. I'm never going to look that up. What a nightmare.
It's awful. It's nightmare fuel. I hate pelicans.
Xenomorph.
I used to love pelicans when I was a kid. I thought it was so fun how they like scoop water up in their big bills, and I was like, look at them, they're so cute. And the more I learn about them, the more horrifying. I guess it's like, don't meet your heroes, right?
It's like ducks and otters. There's a horrifying dolphins, side you don't want to know about.
Dolphins, otters, pelicans, koala bears, all of them are ruined for me. Just all of them.
Oh man.
Older I get, the less animals I like. And it's awful.
It's like the opposite of that Mark Twain quote where he's like, the more I learn about people, the more I like my dog.
I mean,
the more I learn about animals,
there is also the that, but like, just like slowly, like, I love all animals, and now I'm like, I love all animals except those ones.
Just have
over
a running
there.
List.
Pelicans, awful. That's where we're going with that.
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
I'm sold on it. I'm sold.
Terrifying.
It was hilarious.
I had a different opinion coming in, and you've changed my opinion out.
Yeah. As one should.
Happy for it.
So I have books on my to read list. It is NaNoWriMo, so I am writing this month. I am not reading anything this month, but I want to read Once Upon a Fang in the West.
Oh yeah, that one looks fun.
Local author, I cannot remember his name.
Yeah,
but
John Dover.
There we go. Sold it to me while I was I was like on door duty, and he was pitching his book to some other people, and he's like, basically, it's a spaghetti western with man-eating vampires and vampire-eating demons, and there's a quest to resurrect someone that got eaten by a demon, and I was like. He's like, someone dies in the first 5 pages, and I was like, done.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Done. Nice. I'm sold. So
great.
I want to read that.
Yeah.
And then I picked up The Girl in the Green Silk Dress and the follow-up book, which I am blanking on, by Shannon Maguire.
I love them.
Oh, I love those books. I swear I already own them, and I cannot find them anywhere. So I was just like, I'm gonna buy them again and read them.
Everybody shook their head except for me, when you said the name of that book. Do we know these books?
I'm just familiar with the title.
Can somebody tell me about them?
The premise behind these two books is there was this this girl who got murdered at a crossroads by, I forget, I don't think he's a demon. He might be a demon. It's been a minute since I've read the books. Kind of like as a sacrifice. And her spirit lingers on, and she becomes a spectral hitchhiker, more or less. And she kind of ends up getting entangled in this plot where she has to protect a bunch of people and save her own soul so that it doesn't get used in this magic ritual kind of thing.
Okay.
And so it's now a 2-book series. Girl in the Green Silk Dress is the first one. And it's really good. It's paranormal fantasy, or not, well, not paranormal fantasy, like we have it.
As soon as you said that, her dress came off in my head.
Yeah, no. That's why I walked back on it. It's urban fantasy, paranormal based, but not that kind of paranormal fantasy.
Yeah. All right.
Shannon Maguire is a really amazing writer. She's written quite a few other books.
Have you read Middle Game yet?
I haven't read Middle Game yet.
Oh my god, that's so good.
That is also on my to read list. I just have to buy it.
I can lend it.
Oh my gosh. Aaron, stop.
Middle Game.
Uh-huh. Middle Game. Oh, that's so good.
She also did the writing for one of the
Spider-Gwen comics those came out. Yeah, she did the writing on that. Fantastic. Love her work.
It's becoming quite prolific. Mm-hmm. The Wayward Children series is also wonderful.
Yes.
All right. Well, cool. We'll wrap it up there then. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're getting better at our endings.
Yeah, I think so.
Wrap it up there then. Okay.
I don't know how to end these things.
Just like, hey, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Yeah.
Thank you.